back on Buckets of Books, talking about what we've read recently.
But also, Alice and I are fresh off an IRL meeting, as the kids say, I think. We were just in New York. I went up to see her in A Midsummer Night's Dream, and I just want to give that production a shout out because she and the whole cast were wonderful. The production value is really high, and it just feels like it should be mentioned as just a really good experience. So, would recommend the Beacon High School theater program in the area.
I also recommend the theater program, and I realized I've been to a couple bookstores since the show closed, and I was like looking for copies of Midsummer, just like to see if they had any pretty copies. And it's weird, like having done a show and then seeing it in a book, which, like, obviously it came from this original copy first and not like my script that's in a binder, but it's weird, like, when I look at this writing, Shakespeare's writing now, it's like, oh, like, that's my friend saying that, like, I know that line, I know that scene. So just like interesting, like, how it exists outside of my high school now.
It's I wonder changed. How long it'll be like that, where you kind of read a line in a certain person's voice, if it'll be forever until next time you see the show.
I still remember the Queen Mab monologue from when I was Mercutio in like 8th grade or whenever it was.
That's right, you did used to do Shakespeare. I didn't know that you were Mercutio though.
I was, that was really fun. Our 8th grade production of Romeo and Juliet, right before COVID. But that's the only one that's, like, really stuck with me.
You could still do the whole speech? Are you prepared to do it?
Maybe not right now, but, like, when I'm, like, getting a shot at the doctors, I, like, say it to myself to distract my brain. So I might need to, like, be under pressure at the doctor's office to recite it, but I think I could do it.
Impressive. Yeah, I had read A Midsummer Night's Dream before. It had been a long time, but it did really emphasize the difference between reading and seeing a play performed with a comedy, I think.
Yeah.
Especially because it was just so much funnier, so much livelier. I loved the play before, but just it's so much funnier to hear it aloud, and I think that the play within a play, like, works better and makes more sense when you're mm-hmm. seeing it versus reading it. You get all of that comedic value with the girl playing the wall was funny.
I liked her. I know, it's like, obviously Shakespeare is so famous for so many reasons, but like, he also was part of the production process, like, when he was alive and like producing these plays for the first time. Like, it's interesting that, like, and with something like Hamlet that has survived centuries, it's like, it makes sense because you can just take the writing and reproduce it. And with Midsummer, it's so physical, and like, it's a comedy, like, there is so much that is up to interpretation when you're doing it, and it's like so impressive that it still survives. And like, I'm sure Shakespeare would be shocked at society now, but like, it is still his play and his stories with so much added to them.
Right. It does feel like more was added for this show than in other Shakespearean plays that I've seen performed, because you all were doing so much physical comedy, and that's not written in and necessarily. And but also, you know, the way you deliver a joke, your facial expressions, all of that are things that are up to the actor and the direction, basically. So it feels like a play that you could see another production of in a month and feel like it's totally different.
Yeah, and like nowadays, like, I feel like stage directions are such a part of the play, where like Sarah Rule is one of my favorite playwrights and authors, and her stage directions are like so poetic, and like reading, I love her plays that I've seen perform, and then I would like, I always like go and look at the scripts after, because like, there's so, it's like, it's not just stage directions, it's not just like, oh, she exited, oh, she entered. It's like so much more, even if it's a stage direction about the set, and then you see the set, like, I think they're so beautiful. And I think that's true with a lot of other modern playwrights, but like, looking at Shakespeare's, it is just entrances and exits, and like, that's kind of all he gave. And then like, the dumb show and the physical comedy is sort of just there for you to, it just expected of whenever it's being done.
And the singing in this one, too.
Well, yeah, in our production at Beacon, one of the seniors in the cast, who was also the AD, composed the entire score and then wrote. The writing was from Shakespeare. There is this monologue that a fairy has, but then the AD, who's a student, like, composed the music for it, specially tuned to the actress who was playing the fairy. So, like, the words are Shakespeare's, but, like, they wrote this lyrical composition, which was super duper cool.
Yeah, that was really cool. They got a big round of applause before the show even started.
Yeah, deservedly.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we were going to talk about books that we're reading, but this wasn't our topic, but it's an interesting one. So I'm reading The House of Mirth by Edith Wharton, and I really love it. I'm back with my...
One moment, technical difficulties. Some technical difficulties, but we are back.
You love us for our low production value. I was saying that I am reading The House of Mirth by Edith Wharton, which for the most part I really like and am quite engaged by. I'm back with my 19th century novels again. You know, there's a good romantic element. It's like old New York. You know, they're taking the carriage and going to the country house and going to the opera, and it's a book about like New York society from back then. And I really like the characters, the main characters, and just find it really, really readable. And I think it would be a favorite, except for, like, my one big complaint with it is that, like, the bad guy who's, like, new money and he kind of wants her, but can't have her, or at least from where I am in the book. And nobody likes him because he's new money, and he's also Jewish, and I kind of think he's, like, a bit of a caricature. He's sort of like, oh, nobody like wants him in our group, but you're kind of like, it feels like the author kind of wants you to side with the society people, not him, and like prejudice. And so I really don't like that, and it's a shame because otherwise I feel like it would be perfect for me.
That's annoying. It's like, I don't know, I feel like sometimes there's a character who is posed as the villain and like you want to like them and you just can't, and it seems like there are really good reasons for not liking them or this situation here, but it's like, it's really just a flaw on the author's part.
It feels that way, and I think he is kind of portrayed as like, you know, this is somebody who doesn't have class, who, you know, doesn't have like a sense of style like everybody else, but it's just like from a modern lens, or, you know, honestly, like any lens, you know, it looks like, oh, these people are excluding him, and, you know, it just doesn't read well at all. And if it weren't for this villain, if I just kind of cut him out, because he's not really very important right now anyway, it would be the kind of book that I normally like and read.
Do you think it's, like, a choice? Like, is the author trying to say something? Or I don't really know what they would be saying with this, but, like, or do you think it's just bad writing?
So far, I mean, I'm not that far. I'm maybe a third, and he hasn't been, like, a big person yet. But so far, I have to assume it's just bad writing. I don't know. It also feels like books like that, they just love to generalize and stereotype people in general, like, but usually I associate it with books that make broad generalizations about men and women. They love to be like, like the woman is a credit to her species, and like a, you know, she's, you know, the fairer sex are the more like artistic ones and they're crafty, where we simple men, you know, those are the kind of stereotypes I associate with this kind of book. But which is still like not great, even if they're being flattering to the women, but with this, it's just like, what are you doing here? You're trying to ruin my story, you know?
Yeah. Was it written recently, or is it
old? No, it's old. It's like written during the time when it was
set. Oh, I didn't realize that. I thought it was like about old society.
No, yeah, she lived like early 1900s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
That does, like, change the way that you view it, but still, it's, you know, you're like, Edith Wharton, like, you were one of my favorites until, what are you doing here?
Do you think, I don't know, because I thought it was about high society, like, written, old high society written now, but do you think it feels like it's trying to, it is accurately portraying it, or do you think it's, like, leaving out the messy bits of high society?
I don't know, I guess. Usually the books that I read, I read a lot of, like, British literature from this time, and so, I've read one other Edith Wharton book, but it does feel very American. It feels, mm-hmm. they're all kind of like, the book is about society and status, and the main character, she's like plucky and interesting and beautiful, and she like has all this pressure to make a life for herself. She keeps calling it her career is finding a rich husband. And so I guess, like, I'm not a historian, I don't really know, but it has, like, this kind of, like, American spirit, individualist sort of feel to it. You are, like, rooting for her, and you want her to find success, but, you know, obviously there's somebody that she loves who doesn't have a lot of money. So I generally like it, but there are some flaws, for sure.
I know that you like these older kinds of books, but do you feel like it's readable, like, literally readable, or is it too, I don't know, does it feel too difficult or too jargony?
No, this one doesn't feel that way at all. I think, especially with it being American, you don't have that kind of, mm-hmm. The same kind of language barrier there as you do with older British books, and it was, you know, 120 years ago, I want to say. Yeah. So not like that book Pamela I was reading in the 1700s, like, the language
the worst
is a lot
book ever.
Oh, did I cut out?
No, I was just saying I feel like Pamela had so many things wrong with it.
Yeah, that one was you couldn't unknot all of the problems with that one. But no, I think this one's really readable. It's very witty. The characters, for the most part, are interesting, dynamic, and sparkly. There are a lot of, like, society bore kind of characters, but the main character is really compelling, and her love interest, and a few of her friends. And she's, like, really getting into trouble because she, like, trusts this guy who's investing for her on Wall Street, and it feels really different from these British books that I read, even though it's still an older novel.
Would you recommend it, even with its flaws?
Yeah, I think so. I would just, like, tell somebody that up front and say, like, you mm-hmm. know, if this, you know, take this with a grain of salt, or, like, you know, go at your own risk. But I'm enjoying reading the book overall. It just has this one thing that bothers me every time this character comes in, but then as soon as he's gone, I'm, like, enjoying it again, you know? So I guess, like, kind of mixed.
I feel like it's an interesting question of, like, do we ignore these problems in books, or not excuse them at all, but just, like, how do you, I don't know, should the whole book be ignored, or should you just try to not focus on this one part of it?
Right. There are so many books like that where you think, okay, it was a different time. Like, the author was, you know, working under a certain sociological gaze, I guess. But also, like, you want people to just be better, you know? Like, she is a wonderful writer. Like, I, you know, the last book I read from her, I really, really loved. I would have really, really loved this if it hadn't been for this one thing. It would have been maybe even a favorite. So I don't really want to excuse them, you know, but it's all a complicated conversation when we look back on these things.
I think it's also, like, I don't know, saying something is of, quote-unquote, of the times, I feel like it's never an excuse for anything, because there were always people in those times who weren't writing caricatures and stereotypes and saying racist things, but it's also, like, I don't think an entire book should be, like, I don't know. I don't know how to go about, like, that now.
In any of your classes, have you read things from that kind of perspective? Like, we're kind of looking at this as history, but there are things that are problematic with it. Like, you're going into it with that mindset, or do your teachers just kind of pick better books?
I think, I don't know, like, we still read Catcher in the Rye and Gatsby and Hamlet and, like, whatever, but, like, I know my dad read Gone with the Wind, and we would never read that in school. Like, that would never be in any of the curriculum. So I think they are choosing better books, but it's also, like, the books we're reading, like, we read Passing last year, and, like, that is, you know, like, that is purposely about racism in America, and so it's not, like, the author had these stories or stereotypes in there. It's, like, that is what the book is about, and then we're discussing it through that lens. So it's, like, a much more, it's not, like, actual racism in America. It's, like, let's discuss what this looks like in this book where the author chose to include it. So it's, like, I think they are just picking better books, and I also think, like, when it is in a story, it's intentional, and we're discussing that, like, as the purpose of reading the book.
Right. Like, I feel like there's probably a survey class out there for college, you know, like, reading racist books or things like that and engaging with them in that way, but I think that that makes sense for high school, especially, you know, like, for some students that, you know, you're kind of grappling with literature for the first time and being, like, at such formative years, I think that it, like, we should be exposing high school kids to works that are engaging with these things properly. And, you know, maybe, like, for a historical look back, like, those should be done in kind of a different setting, I guess.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference, like, between a college class, like you mentioned, even if that doesn't exist, and then, like, a core English curriculum. Like, this year I got to choose the English classes I'm taking, but, like, in the past it's, like, English 9, English 10, English 11, so it is, like, there's a difference there between choosing, like, the intentionality of books and then, like, looking at these problematic books through a historical lens in college, if that ever happens.
Right. So this is just a tough one for me because, you know, there are plenty of books where you can look at, you know, look at them through that lens, like, that could be on the syllabus of that survey class, and you look at them being like, this is deplorable, but Edith Wharton is still, like, a very celebrated writer, mm-hmm. and one who, in a lot of ways, I celebrate. You know, and maybe somebody else would read this book and disagree with me, but that was my initial impression of this character. And it's, you know, it's putting a big black spot on this book that could have been so perfect.
Right. It totally sounds like a book you would like otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, and it's been fun to read, but I just have complicated feelings about it, I guess. Mm-hmm. What are you reading?
I am, like, halfway through Midnight's Children by Salman Rushdie, and I really didn't like it at first. I read Haroon and the Sea of Stories a while ago, and so, like, when we got to Midnight's Children, it's, like, I enjoyed that when I read it, but it's in my magical realism class still, and so, like, we just finished 100 Years of Solitude, which I loved, and then, like, this is definitely inspired by Marquez and his genre creation, but it's, like, totally different, and, like, it's first person in this, like, crazy kind of way where we're jumping through time and, like, we're jumping through perspectives, and it's, like, he uses a lot of, like, different dialects in it, and it's, he wrote it in English, but it's, like, all, I don't know, there are lots, like, there's just so much that happens in every page, and I did not like it at all at first, and then we got to this one chapter, like, I think it was, like, the 7th or 8th chapter, and it's, like, a 500-page book, like, this is an intense book, and we got to, like, the 7th or 8th chapter, and it was about, it was, like, the mom was having this thing happen, and the dad was having this thing happen, and they were, like, in totally different places with totally different things going on, but they were he told it in, like, this really interconnected way where it's, like, it would be one paragraph about the mom and then one about the dad, and, like, you couldn't really tell who it was talking to, but, like, they had these mirror events happening all at once, and it was told so that, like, you weren't totally sure which perspective it was. You could tell what it was about, but, like, you, because it was interconnected, it's like you were like, oh, they're like mirrors, they're parallels. So it's like very intentional and just like really beautiful. And then after that I started to like it, and it's like crazy and confusing, but I think I like it now. And it's also just like, I have no idea how you go about writing a book like this. Like, it seems so difficult and impressive.
Is it like Marquez, where you aren't really understanding it at first, but then once you kind of get that you're not supposed to and it clicks in that way, you get, like, the kind of mastery it took, or is it not doing that as well?
I think, like, all magical realism, to me, like, that is what defines it as magic, where it is reality and it is realism, and there's just something that isn't working, and, like, that kind of is the magic of the book. So, like, yes, totally, it's confusing, and, like, you just have to embrace that you're not gonna understand every single reference, and, like, but this is also, this takes place in our world. Like, it is centered around partition and independence, and, like, it's real character, not, well, the characters aren't real, but, like, Nehru was a character, and, like, real events that actually happened, whereas 100 Years of Solitude was, like, very loosely based on Colombia's history. This is about India's history. So part of the confusion is just, like, there are so many references that, like, I just don't have time to look up every single one. But it's, the characters all have different names, and so it's a different kind of confusion where it's not, like, I'm struggling to keep track of who is who or, like, when a certain event happened, but rather just, like, it, like, what details are actually important, where, like, there'll be a scene that takes place in the street, and they'll just, like, start talking about all of these, like, people on the street, and you just, like, kind of have to cipher through to get to, like, where the actual story is. Like, the farther I go, the more I realize, like, okay, here's, like, the main thread, but it, part of it is about, like, all these other threads coming together. And I think the more, one thing that it does, like, that's definitely purposeful because it just keeps happening, is where they'll mention something that, like, you don't understand, and then by the end of the chapter or two chapters later, they'll reveal what that thing was, and then all of a sudden the first chapter makes sense, where it's like, it's not necessarily confusing in the beginning, but it's like, why are they spending so much time talking about this blanket? And then two chapters later you realize why, which, like, just keeps happening again and again. And I think that's a choice on Rushdie's part, I think, because it's a lot about family history, but it's definitely different. I would say it's more complicated than confusing.
Gotcha. I do love a big, like, change in perspective where suddenly it all makes sense. But also with things like that, I mean, that kind of sounds like a lot of work to read. Like, you have to stay really focused the whole time. Like, do you still find that enjoyable?
Yes, and I think, like, it's definitely dense and, like, hard to read, and there's just so much that happens that I, like, kind of lose track of it. But with 100 Years of Solitude, I felt like if I zoned out for a page, I would just, like, be entirely lost and in a totally different generation and world and, like, just totally lost. With this, I feel like the narrator definitely does go on tangents, but, like, I can read it more like a story and less like this very fragmented, you know, twisty whatever. Like, it definitely is more of a stream, like, it's not traditional in any way, but compared to 100 Years of Solitude, it is a more traditional narrative that you can just, like, follow through.
Gotcha. Like, kind of related question, but more general, like, what do you think your, like, level of intensity while reading is, or, like, what kind do you enjoy? You know, there are people who kind of want, you know, something that is easier to follow, and some people who feel like they're devouring every single word, I feel like.
I think it depends. I don't like reading a book that I, like, cannot. I don't like reading a book if I absolutely have to give it 100% of my intention, like, and it's not you know, like, there's a difference between, like, a beach read and then a book I'm reading for school, or even, like, I read, like, the first half of The Waves by Virginia Woolf, and I just, like, I read it in, like, tiny little fragments again and again and again, but it's just, like, it's so difficult to follow, and I just, like, can't give it my full attention most of the time, but, like, I love that book, and it's, like, beautiful. So I feel like there's a difference between a hard book that I enjoy and then a book. And I can't really think of an example of this right now, but just, like, I don't like it when it's just, like, too difficult. Like, I just don't enjoy having, because I want to be able to enjoy it, and I don't want to be focused on reading it the entire time, you know?
Right. I hate the feeling of you zone out for, like, two lines and some like, action has happened that you missed. Yeah. Where things are, I don't know, kind of, like, vague or fast in that way. I think it to me, the ideal is where, like, it's not that a plot is like, so complicated, but rather, like, the writing is the thing that makes you want to, like, really zoom in and reread lines over and over again. But there's, like, a time and place for those kind of more complex things, too. I just think that's, like, my, like, sweet spot of really enjoying a book.
I agree. And I also think, like, it really does depend on the time. Like, I read Pride and Prejudice recently, which is, like, such a fun, like, it is a fun book, but that was, like, I didn't ever read it before bed. Like, I had to have energy and be awake enough just to read that. But I don't know, I like this the more I read it, and it really is, like, masterful writing and just, like, story planning, and I'm very much in awe of, like, how he managed to tie all these stories and all these events, and just, like, there's just, it's, like, so, there's just so many words on the page, like, it's really impressive how much he's packing into these 500 pages.
Yeah, totally. I am always in awe of that kind of thing, like we were with Marquez, like, you know, when we suddenly realized, like, oh, you're not just throwing paint at the wall, you know, like, you really thought this out every single timeline and character. So that's something I, you know, looking forward, would like to do more, be more intentional with structure and timing like that, because I always enjoy it so much when it's done well.
Yeah, and I have no idea how Rushdie or Marquez, like, wrote these sagas with so much happening, but, like, I feel like when I write, I don't usually write planning ahead that far. Not that I'm, like, planning, not that I have, like, 300 pages and I don't have the 400th one planned, but, like, there has to be some level from the beginning of knowing where it's gonna go, and I feel like I very rarely write knowing, even if it's just, like, a page-long short story, where I want it to end.
Yeah. Maybe you and I can talk about this more when we're off air, but I have a project that I've, like, started thinking about recently, like, a maybe something longer that is more like this and is really different, because I'm usually kind of like you too, like, I have broad plot points that I want to hit, but in the meantime I'm like, well, what would happen if this character went to the post office, you know, and just explore that and, you know, cut what doesn't work. But I have an idea for something that is, like, really timing and structure based, and I think it's gonna be really hard for me to do that. And, like, I'm already thinking, like, should I buy poster boards, should I buy index cards, like, how am I gonna, like, plot this out all out in a way that I'm really unused to.
I have more to say about the index cards, but I would really I would recommend this, and I would encourage someone who's reading it to get past those first couple of chapters, which usually I hate when people say that, because it's like, I want to be able to enjoy a book from the beginning. But I think if I were to go back and reread those first chapters now, I would enjoy them, just knowing that it gets better. So
yeah,
I do recommend this. This
is a long... magical realism class has been a good one for you.
I know, I'm realizing how much I love magical realism, which I, like, feel like I always kind of knew, but it's, I have new definitions of the genre now that I appreciate.
Oh, I want you to write some.
I do too. yeah, maybe we will talk about that. Oh, maybe that can be our special 100th episode that we keep teasing.
What is a magical realism episode?
Or just, like, our writing can be in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We'll do some planning and get back to you, listeners.
Now we're on a tangent. But that is this week for Buckets of Books.